You know, every family has stories that or events that have happened inside their family's life that have become their favorite family stories. Things, in other words, stories they can retell over and over again. And even though everybody knows how it's going to end, you know, the kids still say, "Hey, Dad, hey, Ma, tell that story. Tell about that time." You all have stories like that in your family? "Hey, tell about that time." And everybody knows how it's going to end, but they tell the story anyway. Well, I want to tell you one of ours this morning. And Stacy's not here, so I'll make sure and include this about her. When Stacy and I had been married about 2 years, we decided we were going to take the youth group. We were youth pastoring. And we decided to take the group snow skiing. And I'd never been snow skiing before, but she had. And so we got up to Beach Mountain in Boone, North Carolina. And we got up there, and I didn't even know what to do. But the first thing you do when you get in there is you put these, it's kind of like stormtrooper boots. You see Empire Strikes Back? Kind of like stormtrooper boots that immobilize your entire leg. And you sort of walk alien-like. You know, you're trying to get, or like gravity boots, you're trying to get used to this. So I'm walking around real funny thinking I'm going to fall over. And then you strap these 6-foot bed slats on each foot. Then this ski bib and all this, you know, all this. If you've been there, how many of you have been skiing? You know what I'm talking about? All right, all this stuff. Then you got these poles in your hand, look like cattle prods. And then you get up on this little bitty hill and they say, "Okay, we want to test your skills out." I didn't need to test. I knew what mine were. Zero. Have any skills? And what we want you to do is the instructor's down here, slightly down the hill. You just sort of ski toward him and do whatever he says. He's going to evaluate how good you are and what school you need to go to be trained before we let you out on the slope. Great. So I get out there and I'm thinking, you know, I'm a newlywed. I've been married 2 years. I thought, my wife's been skiing before. She's going to show me up. I gotta impress her. I gotta do something. So I go down, I'm focusing, and the guy said, "Okay, turn right." And I thought, "Well, there's no steer. I don't know. Why do you do that? Turn right." So I just kind of started, and so I sort of go right. You know, I'm going like half mile an hour. But it's a real, so then he goes, "Turn left." And I did that. And I'm thinking, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what's going to happen. And I kind of just sort of cruise past the guy. He goes, "Oh, okay, you do pretty good. You go to medium," whatever medium was, not beginner, whatever medium. And I thought, wow, and then I couldn't stop. You know, I'm like, I'm glad he's not looking because I can't stop. Well, then my poor little wife comes along. You're gonna swear I made this up. She comes along. She's looking at the instructor, and he says, "Turn right." She doesn't turn. Turn right. She doesn't turn. Turn right. She doesn't turn. He said, "Turn left." She doesn't turn. He said, "Turn." She doesn't turn. And I don't know what he was thinking. I didn't know if he thought a UFO was going to land and come and get her. I don't know what he thought, but I'm telling you the gospel truth. I witnessed it with my own eyes. She went straight over that man. He didn't move. She went straight through him. And I know you're going to think I'm making this up, but it was like a cartoon. I could see ski trails around his body like a buried snow angel and two ski trails like this. She went not through him. She went over that man. He was done. He got up, brushed the snow out of his face, and he said, "Beginners." And I thought, well, you should have moved. So then I thought, oh, I got this. She's been skiing before and I hadn't. Look, I've got this. So we went up to the first slope. I'd never ridden a ski lift in my life. I didn't know. Why have lawyers not like sued somebody's eyeballs out for this? How's this a good idea? Jump on. There's nothing to hold you on there. You'll go way up in the sky. You'll have these weights on each foot, these anchors that'll be trying to pull you off all the time. You'll sit on a slab of ice. Then you'll jump off this little pinnacled ice ramp. You just jump. So we got there, and I got on, and Stacy and I are riding up. And I said, "How do we get off?" She said, "You just jump." "Where?" She said, "There's a ramp up there, and you just sort of jump off." So we got up there, and she had already gotten her bearings, and she kind of plops off and shoo, off to the side. And I'm thinking, I don't know if I can land. I get off and I fall on my knees like this. And there's this 8-foot ice wall that has embanked itself too close to the ski lift so your head wouldn't fit between the ski lift and the ice block. Anybody know what's going to happen? This ski lift now is pushing me up my back like this, and I'm going down, and I see an ice block coming at my face. I said, it's going to pop my head like a grape if I don't move it. And so I just went down in the snow. And then it went over my head. And then I'm sitting there thinking, I almost died. And I'm sitting there thinking, what's going to happen now? And all of a sudden, I turn around, and Stacy said, get out of the way. Here comes two other people right behind me that are trying to get off. So I crawl to the side, get all this junk back on, and there's the first slope. I said, all right, I remember what the guy said. Ease out around the pass, shoot the gap, get out on the mountain, and then turn. And then just start, you've seen it on TV, and that's what I was picturing. You know, people in Colorado in this white puffy snow, just like a little bird flying like that, just S shapes. Well, I got out on the mountain. I kind of get the courage to sort of move myself out to the side. I get out there and I said, now I know what to do. I'll turn. I turned. This is the only way I know how to describe it. Have you seen Christmas Vacation? Have you seen when the guy oiled the bottom of that ski disc and went, shah? When I turned that corner, I went, shoo! I turned one time and that's all I got. And I wasn't ready for it. I'm sitting there thinking like this. I'm just bumping along. And all I see is a split rail fence and a ski lodge coming at me. And I thought, they don't have padding. They don't have nothing. So all of a sudden, I just saw a little hill over there. So I just turned up. It went and laid down. Whew. I thought I almost died again. And I'm looking down at the ground going through my legs, and I'm saying, God did not intend us to go this fast. So I thought, not to be defeated, I went back up. And I thought, I can do this. Little did I know what no one told me, because I'd never skied before. It rained the night before, and the temperature dropped and froze the mountain. You ever ice skated downhill? That's what we were doing. So I got back up, and I came over, and I said, I don't know what's going to happen. I got back up, hoisted myself, turn. Then I turned again, and then I lost control, and I'm just going down the mountain like this. Skis starting to pop up. Feels like you're floating in water. Skis kind of popping up, skis going up. When I turned the second time, I went straight across the back of a lady's skis. And she went into a run. Sorry. She's rolling like this. Sorry. I'm a moron. I don't know what I'm doing. Sorry. And I'm just down the hill. And then I hit this little slope, and my leg comes up. And the next thing I remember, skis popped off and went flying. I saw the sky. I went into a 360 roll, and I landed right on my bottom with a ski popped off up the mountain, another one shooting down. And I'm laying there, and my face is hurting. Why is my face hurting? That ski came, and when I went into a 360 roll, it shot right across my lip and cut my lip open. And I'm sitting there with a glove off going, what? I almost died a third time. This is crazy. Why did I do this? Now look, I know you're going to think I made this up. But I'm not. I'm sitting there on the hill. And a little group of 5 and 6-year-olds. Like ducks behind the mother duck. Come down in little S shapes. Floating like this behind a ski instructor right beside me. I know you think I'm lying. I'm telling you on Easter Sunday, I'm not lying to you. They came by swishing like this and they were chanting. We want to jump. We want to jump. I thought if I had a ski pole, I would shish kebab those little turkeys. What do you mean we want to jump? And now you know why we tell that story over and over and over. Every family has a story that they tell over and over, even though they know the end. In the New Testament, spiritual leaders called rabbis used to tell stories the same way. They would tell the stories to teach. So the stories would be told the same way over and over, even though everybody already knew how it was going to end. That's the way that spiritual leaders, rabbis, would pass truth on from one generation to another. Jesus was a rabbi, and he told stories like that. One of the most famous stories that he ever told is found in Luke 15. It's about the prodigal son. Some people have said that this is the most famous story that's ever been written. It goes something like this. There was a man that had two sons. His younger son was anxious to get away, get in the world and do his own thing. So his younger son went to his dad and asked for his portion of the family's inheritance. Now this would have been very offensive because in that culture, in those times, nobody received their inheritance until their parents had passed away. So it was almost like he was saying, I'm ready to move on past you. I'm done with you. Just give me what's mine and let me go. So the dad did. Another reason that was complicated is because in order for the dad to give the son his inheritance, he had to sell some of his land. So he had to sell the property, give the inheritance to the younger son. So the younger son took his money. He went to another country. While he was in the other country, he partied and he lived it up and he spent the money wastefully. He did a lot of bad things with it. Shortly after that, a bad famine broke out in the country, and the younger son had already spent his entire life inheritance. So he got a job. He got a job from someone in that country feeding pigs. The problem is, he was working but couldn't make enough money to even feed himself. And when he would go down and feed the pigs, he would look at their food and he would think, I would give anything just to eat what they're eating. And then according to the story, the younger son came to his senses. I mean, that's how the Bible describes it. He came to his senses. He had walked into so much pain and he had ruined his life so badly that he started to think, you know what? Back home, the people who work for my dad eat three meals a day. And he began to think about what he had left. Have you ever followed a particular course in life or followed your life along a certain decision line? And it seemed like the right thing, it seemed like the best thing, but then one day it dawned on you, oh no, what have I done? What have I done? What did I do? What was I thinking? That's what started to happen to him. The reality of all this started to set in on him. And so he begins to be overwhelmed with sorrow and grief, frustration. And so he starts to rehearse in his mind, I'm going to go home and I'm going to tell my dad, Dad, I sinned against God. I sinned against you. What I did was wrong. And I'm sorry. And if you'll just take me back and put me back on payroll and let me work for you. Just let me work for you. I don't have to be, I would understand if you don't want to have a relationship with me. I would understand if I'm not allowed at family meetings anymore or celebrate family parties. I realize what I've done. Just let me come and work for you. So he begins to rehearse this in his mind, feeling like he doesn't deserve to even be in the family anymore. So he left the pig pen and he heads toward home. When he just broke the horizon, his dad sees him coming. And his dad takes off running because he's excited to see his son. He takes off running. He meets him in the road. He takes him in his arms. He hugs him. And as he's holding him there, his son, with his mouth right up to his dad's ear, he starts to give his speech. Dad, I'm so sorry. Dad, this is my fault. I sinned against God. I sinned against you. And if you'll just have me back and just put me on payroll and let me be one of your employees again. Here's the funny thing, though. The dad didn't hear anything he said. He didn't hear one word. While his son's still talking, his dad turns back to the house and says, hey, my son that I thought was dead has come back home. He tells his employees, hey, we're going to have a big party. Put fresh clothes on him. Clean him up. Put new shoes on his feet. Put his name back on the family business checking account. He can sign checks again. It's all restored. So then the dad says, you know what? More than that, we're going to have a party. Bring the prized beef. Heat up the grill. It's time for a cookout. We're going to have barbecue and baked beans and macaroni and cheese and mashed potatoes and gravy and rolls and sweet tea. This was a southern prodigal. And sweet tea and banana pudding. It's going to be incredible. We're going to have a party. And so the party starts. The celebration starts. And he gives, everybody has the day off. My son's back home. The party's jamming out. And the older brother who was working in the field had no idea what had happened. He comes near the house. He's on his way back home and he hears the music and he sees the people out in the yard, sees the smoke going up, smells the food. And he called one of his dad's employees over and he said, "Hey, what's going on? Is this a work day? Is there a holiday I missed?" He said, "The greatest thing happened. Your brother came back home and your dad threw a party." And the older son was so mad, he wouldn't even go back in the house. He wouldn't go in and eat. He wanted nothing to do with it. So the dad came outside and tried to talk him into it, but he wouldn't listen. So the older son made his argument. He said, "You know what, Dad? This makes me mad. I've never been a bad son. I've followed all your rules. I've honored you. I didn't draw down my inheritance. I've done everything you asked me to do. I've never shamed our family name. I've never wasted anything. And you've never thrown a party like this for me. But my little brother, who took a portion of all that we had, ran off to another country, blew it, wasted it. And now he comes home and you throw this big party and act like nothing ever happened." Now his father told him, "Look, everything I have is yours, but we had to celebrate because your brother, who we thought was dead, came back home." Now there are at least three surprises in this story that I want to give to you. In order for me to give them to you, I have to tell you a little bit of background on the story. This story did not originate with Jesus. Jesus is not the first person that told this story. This story, many people in the crowd would have recognized this story because it was like one of the family stories that I told a few minutes ago. The Jewish people, the Israelites, they told this story and handed it down to pass down spiritual truth. Now, when a rabbi would tell a story, he would wait until he thought it fit the occasion. When it fit the occasion, or a principle needed to be made, a point needed to be made, he would tell the story. Now, here's the three surprises. The first one is Jesus changed the story. The story that you and I have in Luke 15 is not the original form of the story. In the original version of the story, the younger son takes the inheritance, he goes to another country, he blows it, he rehearses in his mind, "I feel so bad, I'm going to come back home, I'm going to ask my dad to put me on payroll and make me a servant." The dad does that, puts him back on payroll, makes him a servant, pays him as an employee, but eliminates him and shuts him out of the family and says, "You are not my son anymore. You're not part of the family. You have shamed us." And part of the son's punishment is that he would not be allowed to be part of the family anymore because he had gone too far and he got what he deserved. Now, Jesus shocked everybody who already knew the story by changing it. In his version, the younger son was welcomed back and not rejected. Now, we'll unpack that in a minute. Here's the second surprise. The second surprise is that the older son was just as lost as the younger son, although he wasn't as far away. The older son was just as lost as the younger son, but he wasn't as far away. He stayed home, he followed the rules, but in his own way, he was just as lost. Now here's the last surprise, and then we'll unpack them for a minute. The greatest surprise in this story, now listen to this closely. The greatest surprise in this story is that the one who told the story was God. Now think about what that must mean. And the God who told the story on Good Friday, 2,000 years ago, laid his life down, going bankrupt, giving everything he had away in order to reconcile himself with his own kids. On Easter, he would be brought back to life and God's power would show the world his love and show the world that his love was real. But right in the middle of this story, he was telling them his love was real before he ever showed them. Now, why did Jesus tell the story? Remember, a rabbi would tell the story that fit the occasion. So Jesus told the story because of who was listening. Who was listening? There were a few different people there listening to the story. One group of people that were listening to the story were tax collectors. And you have to understand, in that time, in that culture, tax collectors were outright, blatant, dishonest people. Most of them, many of them that these people would have known and Jesus would have been referring to were Jews who had sold out their own people and had committed their loyalty to Rome in order to make a profit off their own people. And so tax collectors were there listening. There were others, non-religious people, non-churchgoers, probably even people who had made some bad choices. There were also there people in the crowd, Pharisees and religious teachers. Now, Jesus was telling the story because he was trying to tell the tax collectors, he was trying to tell the non-church-going people, he was trying to say to them, listen, you're like the younger son in this story. He was trying to tell the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you're like the older son in this story. And then he was trying to tell the people that were listening to the story, and I'm like the father in the story. I want a relationship with you. Here's what I found when I thought about this story. Everybody has their own way to deal with God. And I'm willing to say this morning that everybody in this room generally chooses one or two paths in how you deal with God. How do you deal with God? How do you deal with who God is? How do you deal with what God's done? How do you deal with that? Well, some people try to deal with God like the younger brother. They rebel against him. I'll do my own thing. God can't tell me what to do. I'd go to church if there weren't so many hypocrites there. I would be more involved, but there's so many people who claim to be Christians, but there aren't. I'll control my own destiny. Just give me what's mine and leave me alone. And then there are some people that try to deal with God like the older brother. I'll follow all the rules. And I'll follow all the rules so well that God will owe me a good life. God will owe it to me. I'll indebt God to me through my own acts. I will sow what is right, and I will reap only good things. I've been a good little Christian. I go to church. I read my Bible. I tell the truth. Now give me what's mine, God. Give it to me. I've obligated God. In the end, now listen to me. In the end, neither son really wanted the father. In the end, both sons wanted the father's stuff, but not the father. On the other hand, the father could have cared less about his stuff, and all he really wanted was his two sons. This story is really not about the prodigal son. It's about a father who loved his two sons, and both were lost. One broke the rules and was lost. The other one kept the rules and were lost. So how do we know how to deal with God? If the one who broke the rules was lost and the one who kept the rules was lost, then how do we know who's lost? Well, keeping the rules wasn't the issue. The issue was, now listen to this very carefully, this is what Easter morning's about. The issue was accepting the Father's love. And by their actions, both sons had rejected His love. One said, give me my stuff and I'll control it and go my own way. The older one said, I'll do everything you say so well, you'll have to do what I want you to do. But both of them rejected the Father's love and didn't really receive it. Now think about what the Father did. The Father left the house and met his younger son in his rebellion. The Father left the house and met his older son in his religion. But either way, the Father left the house because He's a loving Father. In their own way, they both misunderstood who the Father really was. The point of the story is this. There's no length the Father won't go to show you that He loves you. Regardless of what you've done, He won't reject you. I'm going to ask our musicians to come. I was thinking about how this story plays out for us. You and I live in a part of the country where there's a lot of churches. And there's no doubt in your life, you have been aware that they're there. You've been to some of them. You may have been raised in church. You may have been taken by your grandmother, your parents, And maybe you're more like the older brother than the younger one. Everybody's done something wrong in their life. I don't mean perfection. But you've played by the rules. You've been honest. You pay your taxes. You're a good parent. You've been faithful to your spouse. You work hard. You were raised with good morals. You believe in God. You know a lot about church. But listen to me for a minute. Maybe all of that fits you, but there's some relationship issues between you and God. You're just not very close. Hey, by the way, I don't know if you realized how the story ended. When the story ended, the father and the older son were still outside. Did the older son ever come back in? Jesus didn't tell us. You know why he ended the story that way? Because of who he was talking to. He was talking to the people who grew up around church. And he was saying to them, I'm going to end this story with the father and the older son outside because the choice is yours. The choice is still yours. The ball's in your court. The jury's out. You've got to decide. You've got to pick. Jesus was sending a message. He was sending a clear message to them. Come home. Come inside. Come be in relationship with the Father. Join the party. What's Jesus saying to us today? You know, about 8 Easters ago, I was in a service just like this, and there was a man and his wife who had grown up knowing a lot about church, but didn't really have a great relationship with God. John Anzeldi, he served in the Navy. And that Easter Sunday morning, I watched he and his wife come to faith in Christ, come to relationship with the Father, begin to understand who the Father was. And you know the greatest thing happened? Every Easter I'd run into them somewhere and I'd say, John, how long's it been now? 2 years. How long's it been, John? 3 Easters ago, Pastor. 3 Easters ago. John, how long's it been? 5 Easters ago, Pastor. Last time I saw him, 5 Easters ago. 5 years ago, Easter Sunday. And his life, his marriage, his family, his children changed. Would you stand with me this morning?